Hey everyone, welcome back to Buzzworthy. I'm your host, Schleicy Harris. I dive into the rare stories entrepreneurs tell about building their businesses, but most importantly, themselves. Let's get into it. Welcome back to Buzzworthy, everyone. My name is Schleicy Harris, and today we have Keith Brink in the studio, and his company is Jesara Technology. And we are going to learn so much about Keith, including some of the assumptions I made about Keith that were completely wrong. So don't make assumptions about people.
I'm scared now.
I'll tell you a little bit about it as we kind of go through your story. But his story is filled with a lot of risk, but a lot of purpose and a lot of the word I'm looking for is sort of direct. And, you know, you made the decision and you actioned it.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is such a good marker of a good entrepreneur and just like stepping into risk in such a good way. But before Keith became Keith as we know him today, as we're going to find out, Keith, what do you think set you up to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I love this question, and it kind of when I reflect on growing up and my childhood years, one thing that really sticks out to me is this group of friends that I made when I was kind of in my mid-teens, I guess, and they just unlocked something for me. So I grew up in kind of a conservative environment, conservative church, and in that environment, you know, the main values were conformity and correctness, I guess, kind of over everything else. And I wouldn't have been able to put words to it at the time, but I guess I felt kind of caged or was caged in that environment, even though I didn't know I was necessarily because I was just in that world, you know?
Yeah, that was your world.
That was my world, yeah. And so it wasn't really until I met this group of people. And you know how you like walk into the room with somebody, you like see them from across the room and they're like, somehow you know that they're your people, you know? They've got that spirit, that vibe that you just click with.
There's a comfort in them in some way.
And yeah, this group of friends, we were just like wild and crazy and silly. And we just clicked like in the first few minutes of hanging out with each other. And we spent like our entire teenage years together. They're still amazing friends of mine all the way up until this day. And yeah, just getting to know them, they just allowed me to express things that I didn't even know were in there for me. Being adventurous and trying new things, being a little bit different. And, you know, it was messy too. Like, well, I feel like everything in your mid-teens is kind of messy.
It has to be.
You know? But it was messy. But it was okay. Like, it was okay in the middle of all that mess. We were all figuring out who we were and what we're trying to do with our lives. And I got to try things. I got to go out and be creative. And I mentioned to you earlier that I was into filmmaking, and we made these ridiculous films together, and they would be actors and actresses and hold the camera and just, you know, we did these big film screenings and we invited all our friends and did an open mic and showed people the these crazy films we made. And I don't think anybody really got the films, but that's all part of the fun. And I feel like it was kind of like a jack-in-the-box moment for me where I kind of exploded, you know, and I could never go back to not expressing that like adventurous, silly, crazy spirit.
Yeah.
And to me, that's basically what entrepreneurship is.
Yeah.
You kind of see the world and you're like, I think that there's something exciting we could do in the world together. And you find other people who are excited about this same thing. You all join together and you go in that direction and you blaze a path so that other people can get there too, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's when I think about what set me up to be an entrepreneur, I think that's like the core of it for me.
I think it's It's so refreshing to hear that, you know, you walked into a room and you found that human connection on the other side of it, because often it does take other people to sometimes bring out the best in us. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes people bring out the worst in us, but true. when you find people that bring out the best in you, it really unlocks a different version of someone that had always existed, yeah. but maybe one, they just weren't aware, like you said, you were, that this person existed, or you just like unlock something that was maybe just like a tiny little glimpse of it. And I think that's really profound, because when you sort of step into that world of exploration and curiosity and all of those things and the mess and the chaos and knowing you can get through it, I mean, what else describes entrepreneurship?
Yeah, and the mess is really, it's kind of the scary part. Because you do fall and make mistakes along the way, and that hurts. It's not like it's not nothing to go through that. And I think the pain of starting a business and trying to do things and things don't go the way you expect and you kind of fall down and you're like, am I even capable of doing this? You know, like, am I someone who can be an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
And if you have people around you that are like, yeah, I think you can do it. This is not the thing that defines you. Mm-hmm. You know, I know who you are and it's not this, you know.
Yeah.
I think if you have people in your life that can say that to you and it means something because you know that they know you, I think that is just gold.
Yeah. There's a comfort in that, and that comfort allows you to fully step outside of who you are today in order to like get to that next better version of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you think about these moments and how that sort of shaped your entrepreneurial journey, what would you say is like the thread through all of it?
I think the thread kind of coming through like filmmaking, transitioning into starting a virtual assistant business, then going into an e-commerce business, then going into a software business, you know, like the thread that kind of, I guess, took me through all those things was like just it's a progression that feels natural almost when you arrive there. So one of the things that I always say to people is like, you need to be in motion at some point. And so, you know, when I was just hanging out with these group of friends, we always were doing stuff, you know, we were never just hanging out and like just loitering around the gas station. I don't know what people do, but, you know, we were always doing stuff, making films or organizing events or whatever. And so that motion allowed us to do really fun things, even though, you know, we didn't win any awards or whatever, but it allowed us to have really amazing experiences. And that same like in motion thing, I think, is really important when you want to start something yourself, where you don't necessarily know at the beginning what's going to work and what's not going to work.
Yeah.
But you can't discover what works and what doesn't unless you try. And so when you're in motion, you're trying things, then things will arrive along the way that you're like, actually, that's like a little bit better than the thing that I was doing before. And you kind of like move in that direction a little bit. And slowly over time, you're like way in a different place than you ever thought you would be, you know?
You're like, how did I get
yeah,
here?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like I never anticipated that I would run a software business, you know? I feel like anybody who knew me when I was a teenager would be like, he's not destined for software, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's just the course that things the course that I was set out on, I guess. I don't know how to describe that, but like that's the journey that's where the journey took me, I guess.
It's interesting because, you know, at the beginning I talked about you being sort of really conscious in terms of the decisions you've made. And, you know, I think that through line is so true to like who like I've known you to be in terms of like the person and the conversations we've had so far is, you know, you explained the businesses that you went through, you know, from the virtual assistant to like e-commerce and all of that. But those are all kind of just like actions you took. And, you know, it, like you said, it's always in motion. And I think it's such an important thing. And this has kind of been a thread through a lot of our episodes this season with entrepreneurs is like, you know, you don't actually know where you're going. And you can't really plan it all out and stick to the script because as you start taking action, a different vision emerges in that path. And so I like that through line that you've drawn through your experiences.
Yeah, that reminds me actually of your other guest, Monique, when she was on. Her answer to the question of, you know, what set you up to be an entrepreneur was basically divine appointment.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the in motion element is really important, but there's also like, I think in all of us, like we all were kind of created with this reflection of the divine, I guess, where there's something in us that like pulls us towards something greater than what we are by ourselves. And I think there's that element too where it's not just being in motion in any direction. It's like you're being pulled somewhere and I don't even know where that thing, that place is, you know, because it's like it's a divine thing. It's not from me, it's from somewhere else.
You know? And you kind of just have to trust it.
Yeah.
And you know, I think in today's world, a lot of people are talking about it in terms of alignment.
Yeah.
Right? Like you feel aligned to doing this particular thing. And I think that's very synonymous in terms of like having the divine pull you in a particular direction.
Yeah, where you feel like closer and closer to what you're designed to be like, you know? There's a friend of mine, Steve, he has this term called PGR convergence.
Okay.
Passion, gift, and role. Mm. So passion, you know, what you're interested in. Gifts is like what you're good at.
Your talents,
And role is like what your job is. Mm-hmm. And his whole thing was like every year you get older, your PGR convergence should be like more and more like converge together. So it's like if you're 35, you should be 35% converged. And when you're 70, you should be 70% converged, basically. Where all those things, they kind of slowly and slowly come more and more into alignment as you kind of focus the direction of your life. So I like that one too.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Like, is Steve an entrepreneur?
He is, yeah. Yeah.
Steve, come on the show. Steve needs to be on the show. That's an official invite.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah.
That's very, very insightful. And do you see that playing out in your life, PGR?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I know that, you know, so I'm 35. Mm-hmm. So I'm 35% converged according to Steve's formula. And yeah, I feel like, you know, every year, the things that I'm doing just get more and more of a natural fit for what I am. Like, you know, there's lots of things I don't like about running a software business that hopefully over time I'll be able to kind of like work out, whether it's, you know, kind of expanding the scope of what I'm doing or moving into something else or whatever. But I do feel like over time there are things that I'm more and more gifted at. Like things come a little bit easier, you know, over time. And I think it's not just in entrepreneurship either, you know, like you figure out too, like your relationships with your family and with your friends, like those things you kind of figure out like what those look like a little bit better and how to navigate those relationships a little bit better. I'm married. I've got three kids.
Yeah.
I feel like I get a little bit better every year at being a parent, you know, and being able to like figure out how to like lead. I've got three boys. So like how to like lead these three boys into being, you know, good young men that are, you know, ambitious and kind at the same time.
Yeah.
That's a tangent.
It's not a tangent. It's I think it's a really good thought because, you know, when you think about being 35% there.
Yeah.
35% is a failing grade anyway.
That's a good point.
Right? Yeah. So does that give us even more ability to have, you know, grace and patience with ourselves to know that,
yeah,
you know, we're technically not failing
in
any way. And like, regardless, you know, especially because like the younger you are, the more you have to, you know, the more it compounds and the better you become. And so it's almost like you were technically never failing because you're never going backwards.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's because maybe we have more choice than we ever used to in what we can do with our lives, you know? Like 100 years ago, it's kind of like, well, you're going to be whatever your dad is, you know, basically. And now it's less and less the case that you kind of follow in whatever your parents' footsteps were.
Yeah.
And nobody tells you that, you know, when you're just doing the same thing that your mom or dad did, you know, that feels like that's the right thing to do. And you don't really have to question whether or not you're doing the right thing. Like nobody's going to say, oh, you're doing the wrong thing. Cause it's just kind of like you're doing the thing you're supposed to do, you know? Mm-hmm. But now I think it's harder to tell whether or not you're doing the thing you're supposed to do. Maybe not to yourself, but certainly to the people around you. Mm-hmm. It might be kind of hard to see that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's kind of like new advice. Like I've heard the advice that you should forgive yourself and be kind to yourself, have grace with yourself. But I think it's more important now maybe than it was then. Because the options are so much greater. And so it's easier to feel like you're failing because you might see somebody else that's doing a different thing, or you might see even a path that you could have taken that somebody else took, and they're, you know, from an outside perspective, seems like they're doing amazing and you didn't take that path, you know?
Yeah.
And so, all that to say, I think you're exactly right that the more grace we can have for ourselves, I think the better, you know?
Yeah.
Which is tricky though, because as much as you want to have grace for yourself, you also want that like inner motivation and ambition to do better. So having those two things like work together, if you can do it, it's possible. Like I don't think they're contradictory.
No.
But I think it's hard. Like I think it's hard to reconcile those two things.
I think they have to exist at the same time though.
Right.
Because then you just have then like maybe this like dump truck that just bulldozes down the highway with no restraint, no brakes, right?
Yeah.
And it just keeps going. So I think it has to balance itself. And when you're going that fast with no brakes, like the end is not great, usually.
That's what they tell me.
I never want to find out.
Exactly.
So as we like, let's put it back to like the business a little
bit. Sure,
You had a business in terms of virtual assistants.
Yeah.
Tell us about that really briefly. And like, what was the progression that eventually led you into this software business?
Yeah. So I had a friend in university, and I think midway through university decided that we were going to be entrepreneurs. You know, we were going to start our own business. And in fact, we tried like 17 different businesses together.
Did you actually count them?
No, 17 is an exaggeration.
Okay. But
we tried a lot of things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we were like, let's do a mobile car washing service. Let's do a smoothie business on campus. Let's run a music festival. We had all kinds of crazy ideas. But the main thing that I kind of got from that was like, I want to do my own thing. Mm-hmm. And we almost had this pact together of like, we're going to do our thing, you know? And so after I graduated, I was kind of looking around for like, what am I going to do afterwards? I think it was shortly before I graduated. I was kind of in that space. And I met somebody, Nigel, and he had this idea for how we could connect people living internationally with various business needs in Canada. Mm-hmm. Just a conventional type of virtual assistant sourcing business. But it was newer at that time. You know, that was, I don't know, 10 plus years ago now.
Yeah.
And so it was a little bit newer concept at that time. And so we did that for a while. And it was a struggle. It was hard.
Mm-hmm. What made it hard?
What made it hard was basically I wasn't gifted at it. Ultimately, the business would have been successful through a purely like kind of sales driven model where, you know, there are lots of connections that you could make in that business. And some people could do really well making those connections. But I'm not a naturally like salesy person.
Okay.
So my inclination was to spend a lot more time on the operational side of things, like making sure things were getting done and, mm-hmm. you know, our clients were happy and stuff like that, which is all nice and good. But really what the business needed was somebody to drive the sales.
The sales, yeah.
Yeah.
And if there's no sale, there's no business.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I spent 4 years doing that. You know, those were tough years of my life. Like, you know, I was like sleeping in the office and trying to like find a way to make this business work. And eventually I basically gave up. I said, I don't think I can do this anymore. Yeah. So that's when I pivoted to the e-commerce business. Yeah.
What enticed you about e-commerce?
So what enticed me about e-commerce was I started making money on e-commerce. So I just on the side, I'd read about this whole Amazon FBA thing where you can send stuff to Amazon, they'll sell it for you, they'll ship it for you. Mm-hmm. And so what I ended up doing was I would go to like thrift stores and, you know, Walmart. I would have my phone with me and I would scan all the different things that were in there. And you know, there would be textbooks, for example, and textbooks you can buy for $5 at a thrift store, sell for $100 on Amazon.
Yeah.
So there would be those types of like arbitrage opportunities. Mm-hmm. Tons of people are doing those types of business models now.
Wow.
And so that made me a little bit of money, a little bit more money than I was making doing the virtual assistant thing. And it felt more fun. It was like, I don't have to sell in that way, that same way, you know, I just have to find a product and then make it available.
Yeah. It wasn't eating that part of your soul.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. So eventually after doing the arbitrage thing for a while, then I sold some, like I found some board games in thrift stores and I sold those and I was like, man, I wish I could sell like 100 more of these. And so I thought like, you know, this isn't rocket science for anybody. I'm sure anybody listening is like, obviously this is what you do. But, and I was like, okay, let me find who sells them. So then I found a distributor basically of board games and they had like 20,000 different things that they sold. And I was like, how am I going to decide of these 20,000 different things, which ones I can make money on. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started dipping my toes into the software world a little bit. So I built this little tool that scanned through all the 20,000 items, searched for them on Amazon, compared it with the price on Amazon versus the cost of the item, spit out a list of which ones could make money. Mm-hmm. And so then I was able to make that into an actual more serious business where, you know, we in terms of an e-commerce business, we weren't huge, but we did like $500,000 of sales in like 1 month in December, because December is when everyone's buying games and toys and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it was good for me. It was like my most successful thing.
That's amazing.
To date. Yeah.
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 And to just go from that, from, you know, sleeping in the office, hating your life.
Yeah.
But, you know, you were still committed to finding something that you can make happen.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps that is that curiosity that led you in this direction and said, ooh, this is more exciting to me. This is more energizing to me. And, you know, maybe this was more aligned to what you needed to do.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not a science, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't plug a bunch of numbers in and say, this is what's going to give you energy in the morning.
Yeah.
It's something that sort of arrives to you over time. And it's hard to predict what it's going to be. That's why I think it's so important to just try things.
Yeah. And in all of this, you were deciding to get married and move to another country.
Yeah. So that happened. That was still like in the middle of the virtual assistant business. Mm-hmm. I was running that. So that's when I met my future wife. And we kind of had this shared interest in living internationally, and faith was a really important part of our relationship. Mm-hmm. And so we knew people that were like living internationally and having these amazing experiences and kind of being able to express their faith in different parts of the world. And that was appealing to us, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so when we got married, we were kind of looking, we were open maybe for that opportunity, even though it wasn't really possible. So basically shortly after we got married, I transitioned into the e-commerce business.
Okay.
That was a tough business to be able to go and transport internationally. You know, you're like doing, I had a warehouse and whatever. So it's not like that was going to be possible for us to move at the time. But because I had started to dip my toes into software, I also had developed this other software tool to help with the warehouse. So, you know, I was doing $500,000 of sales in 1 month. So that meant I had a busy warehouse. I had stuff coming in and out, and I was trying to, you know, the operations. Yeah. High volume. So the name of the game was like, can you get this into your warehouse and out of your warehouse as fast as possible so that you can sell this stuff as fast as possible? And so I had this problem where Amazon had these labels that you had to put on everything. If you're shipping to Amazon FBA, you have to put labels on everything. And the format they gave wasn't compatible with this label printer that I had that was able to do really high volume kind of prints for not very much money. So it was a really nice tool to have if you can make it work, but it didn't work. So I built a little tool that converted the format from Amazon into this label printer. And I was like, you know, there's probably other people in the world that have this same problem that I do. Mm-hmm. And so I put together a little website. I was like, I'll charge $5 a month. You can use it. And, you know, maybe I'll make $100 a month on a side business. Yeah. Right. But it turned into a whole thing. Like, you know, now I've had like 20,000 Amazon sellers on the platform using it. We've shipped like 80 million different items into Amazon using this platform. It just went crazy. Yeah.
Wow.
And so on the back of that product, I started charging more than $5 a month for it over time.
The value is there. Yeah, it proved itself.
Yeah, the value is there. Exactly.
Yeah.
So on the back of that, I eventually sold the e-commerce business, and that gave us the opportunity because now we had this software business that was like, we could do this anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, now we're ready for the next adventure that's ahead of us. And, you know, we don't want to live our whole lives in Canada. So let's take this opportunity before we have kids to go and live somewhere internationally. And so we had thought about a bunch of different places. We had some friends that lived in the same apartment building that we were living in. Mm-hmm. They were from Syria. They had come to Canada because of the war in Syria. Mm-hmm. And we became really good friends with them. We loved hanging out with them. And that, I guess, made us curious about that part of the world and interested in. They introduced us to some of their family that was living in Jordan.
Yeah.
And so we're like, okay, maybe we could go live in Jordan for a little while. So we're like, let's go for a year.
Wild.
See how it goes. You know, yeah. I guess it is wild. You know, it's our life, so it doesn't feel as wild.
It's the reason I think I say wild, not because there's nothing wrong with Jordan.
Yeah.
But I feel like to relocate to another country is already a big thing.
Yeah.
And then to relocate to a country where you don't speak the language.
it's a barrier. Yeah.
The culture is nothing like the culture you've grown up in.
Totally.
Like, it's just like a full 180, you know, but you chose to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, that's sort of like the action that, you know, I could see that also just continues to play out. Like, you're just like, okay, we're doing this and we're doing, and you commit to it, which is incredible.
Yeah. And I think another theme here for me is that it's the people that you do it with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was married and I went with my wife, which was, you know, I couldn't have done it without that aspect.
Yeah.
But also when we landed, we met some people. We were going to a school to learn Arabic. And so we met some people there and they became like our besties, basically.
Yeah.
And we ended up spending basically, so we lived in Jordan for 7.5 years. And so we spent those 7.5 years together, basically. We were like,
wow,
you know, neighbors the entire time. They had three boys. We had three boys, and our boys would like hang out together all day. Mm-hmm. And without that like social aspect where we have people that we're doing life with, you know, we couldn't have done it either, you know? Yeah. So it's not just like we were just like there just like by ourselves, you mm-hmm. know, it's like, yeah, we had kind of a vision. We wanted to do this adventurous thing together, but also we needed people around us, just like I always have needed people around me to like encourage me from the very beginning to like express those pieces of myself that I didn't even know were there. Mm-hmm. That's also what I needed in Jordan.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I think that's a really good insight, because like, what is life if it weren't for the people around us?
Yeah.
Right? Like, what stories do you have to tell?
Yeah.
What experiences do you have to live through, even if they're not so pleasant
right.
sometimes? And I mean, that's what it is when we have people around us. You can't get along with everyone 100% of the time.
Totally.
And it's the people we do things with that matters. And I think even, not even more so, but even in business, that's also super, super critical, right? Yeah. There's so many people that go to their job every day and they spend 8 hours at work. That's more time than you spend with your own family. Yeah. When you think about it in the context of, you know, the North American world and the Western world that we live in, it's just like your employees, I mean, the employees and coworkers around you, if you don't love being with them, if they don't enrich your life in some way, if they're not pleasant to be around,
yeah.
that often very much reflects on how you feel about yourself and your overall life in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I was able to kind of build a small team of software developers in Jordan mm-hmm. That I had that experience with. In fact, I was able to work with somebody that was way smarter than me. I still work with him now. His name is Zaid. He's just an amazing software developer. Like, you know, and being able to work with people that kind of elevate you, mm-hmm. you know, they're like, it's okay to work with people that are just kind of like your colleagues. Yeah. But when you work with somebody that takes you somewhere that you didn't know existed, you know, teaches you things that are beyond what you would have been able to learn on yourself, you know, mm-hmm. that's an experience that I just feel very fortunate to have had that experience, I guess,
yeah.
because it shapes you, it makes you into more than you expected that you would be, you know.
Yeah, you're just like a richer person overall.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I think people should actually start talking about like wealth in terms of like their lives in that way.
Yeah.
Like wealth
in your life
and riches should be about who is in your life.
Yeah.
Versus your bank account.
Yeah. Cause I'll tell you, it doesn't matter what level of revenue I get to, you know, I'm never satisfied with a number on a screen, you know, yeah. it doesn't really matter what the number is. Obviously you need a base level to survive.
Yeah.
But once you're kind of beyond that, it's like, yeah, you want to hit these milestones and that's exciting. I like to be able to kind of yeah. pursue growth and make things bigger and serve more people. But ultimately those things make me happy for a day,
the moment in time.
Yeah, like I hit that number, like, oh, that's a nice number. And then after that, it's like it doesn't fill you in any way, like long term.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, like, working with some of the people that I work with, that's the kind of thing where even now, like, I feel warm thinking about those people, you know what I mean? And that's like, that's the kind of thing that fills you up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very enriching. And I think as entrepreneurs, what we do every day is hard.
Yeah.
And without those enriching people in our lives, like, people talk about entrepreneurship being so lonely. And it is lonely because nobody really fully understands like 100% of the experience that you have. But nobody truly understands the 100% of anybody else's experience.
Also true.
So why not just like that sliver and slice, you understand that it's okay.
Yeah.
That people don't get it.
Yeah.
But make sure that the rest of it is still rich and not isolated because, you know, you gave yourself this title.
Yeah. And you'll feel different things on different days. Mm-hmm. There's no way to avoid those days of loneliness, I think.
Yeah.
Where something happens or even you're just not excited about coming into work and you have a pile of things that you should be doing and you're overwhelmed by it and you end up not doing any of them.
Yeah.
And it's hard to describe. It's hard to describe that feeling, I think, where you're responsible. There's nobody that will take these things away from you, you know?
No one that can take
them. No one that can take them away from you. Exactly. And, you know, you're going to have those days. It's unavoidable. It's part of the journey. But in some ways, I feel like things aren't beautiful unless there's a hard aspect to them. Mm-hmm. You know, this might be a little bit kind of too weird, like too artsy in some ways. But, you know, in art, like if you see a painting, one of the things that makes a painting stunning is the contrast between like the very dark elements and the light elements, you know?
Yeah.
It gives the painting depth.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's true in our life too. Like when you experience lows, it gives you perspective.
And dimension. And
something. Yeah. Yeah. It gives you depth just like a painting.
Yeah. That's a beautiful description.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when you look at like some even like abstract art.
Yeah.
And you're just like, how can something just squiggly lines or brush strokes here and there make you feel a certain way?
There's some emotion to it.
Yeah. Somehow. And it's because of exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, you've gone through these couple businesses and now you end up, you know, after your e-commerce. So what happened with the e-commerce business that pushed you into another direction?
So that one was, there was actually a whole thing there with like, I had an investor and he pulled out of the business and I was like, it really cash. I didn't have any cash left, basically. Ouch. So I was in a bit of a situation. So I kind of had to sell it under a little bit of duress.
Yeah.
It wasn't terrible. I don't have any negative feelings about that because it really positioned us to be able to do the next thing, which was going to Jordan and really leaning into the software business, which worked out amazingly well. So I don't have any negative feelings about that, but definitely it wasn't like, it wasn't something where I was just able to freely sell it and have a bunch of cash and do whatever I wanted, you know? It was much more of a panic sell than anything.
Yeah, because you don't want to hold on to a sinking ship either.
Exactly.
Right? To some degree. And, you know, some of the things we were talking about behind the scenes before we pressed the record button, I think is quite interesting in terms of like the bigger landscape of, you know, selling on platforms and things like that. One of the things we talked about was just like kind of like the short term experience of that, and how do you plan for that as sort of an entrepreneur? You know, when, you know, you were pulling a bunch of data out of sort of Amazon, eventually Amazon built their own version of it, right?
Yeah.
So how, like, when you started to see that shift happen, did that kind of signal to you that maybe I should even start pivoting before this investor sort of came off board?
Yeah, that's a really good thing to bring up, because so I had this software business, this labeling software, and that was actually built on top of Amazon's platform.
Yeah.
So the e-commerce business, you know, I got rid of that sometime in 2017. Mm-hmm. The labeling business was, you know, my bread and butter until maybe 2021. Mm-hmm. And I was actually going to sell that labeling software at one point. And I was literally like weeks away from a deal. So I was going through due diligence with somebody. He had signed a letter of intent to purchase the business. And so we were just kind of making sure all the numbers and stuff, I didn't lie to him. And then literally during that period, Amazon put out an email announcement and said, hey, just so you know, coming to our platform, the exact same thing that our software was doing. And so that obviously blew up the entire deal. And so I wasn't able to sell the business at the time. Where I was, you know, I was going to get a pretty nice lump of cash there that I could have done and started something else with, you know, but it didn't work out that way. So because of that, there was this warehouse in California that I had worked with. Mm-hmm. And because I had this labeling tool and I was an e-commerce seller and I'd worked with this particular warehouse before, we kind of already had a relationship. And he said, hey, I'm having a hard time organizing my warehouse, you know, there's all this stuff coming in and out and I'm losing track of what I've done, and I'm not able to bill my clients because I haven't tracked properly what I've done for them, so I can't invoice them for it.
Yeah.
And my clients aren't happy. I have to pay back money because I can't prove that I sent this inventory out at this time. They're claiming I didn't. So things are a mess. I need help. And I thought, I can build software now. Let me help you. And so I was super naive about the challenges of building this warehouse management system, which is what I ended up building.
Yeah.
You know, it's way more complex of a problem space compared to this tiny little labeling format tool that I had built before. But I had a lot of overconfidence and naivety.
But he also believed in you.
He believed in me. But, you know, yeah. I do a pretty good job of conveying confidence. he hired me to do it. He paid me some money. I built something for him, and you know, that was kind of that. But then after all this happened, I kind of circled back to that software that I built, and we'd been kind of tweaking it and improving it over time as well. And I thought, maybe I can take this software that I built for this one warehouse and we could sell it to more warehouses. Mm-hmm. That there's probably other people. If there's one person having a problem, there's probably more.
Yes.
And so that I said to the guy, hey, listen, can I buy back the rights to the software for you? You can keep using it for free for forever. Oh, but I want to try to like sell it to other people. So that's what I did. I basically did an agreement with him, bought it back from him. And then I readapted the whole thing to work with more than one warehouse. And then basically 2021, 2022, when the labeling tool started, the revenue started to plummet because everyone was starting to use Amazon's tool now instead of mine, then I started to sell this tool into a few warehouses. I got three or four warehouses that I started with. It just kind of slowly started to kick up some revenue over time. It took a long time. It took way longer than I was hoping.
What's a long time?
Like years, you know, like maybe I started in 2021 and I didn't have serious revenue until like 2023. So at least 2 years for everything to kind of kick into motion. And And it was like the graphs of the revenue like intersected at one point, you know, where I was making more money with the new business than I was with the old business. And that was a really exciting moment because I was like, I can survive, you know, I'm not going to have to go work for somebody.
Because it must be like devastating to see this number going down and this one's still down here. And you're like,
it's stressful. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're like cutting back all your expenses, and it's not fun to be on a downward trajectory. It's a tough place to be in.
But when you look back at that, because now that we're having this full conversation, it feels like you were just missing devastation by like a hair.
Exactly. Every time.
Every time. Every single time. Yeah. Like, I feel like that's real entrepreneurship.
Yes.
It's just like you're truly living on the edge.
Yeah. And it's funny because I've heard stories from exactly that like just barely avoiding bankruptcy or just barely avoiding some devastating blow to the business from massive companies too.
Yeah.
I recently heard this story of a company called Alert Labs. Really interesting story. I recommend checking them out. But they basically had that problem where they – burning cash, couldn't figure out who to sell to. And then finally they just like coincidentally got one client that introduced them to their exact fit that they were missing. And then from there they kind of exploded and became huge. So I think it's common in our line of work.
It truly is common because there are some days, I remember I had a day in January of this year. Probably the hardest day I've had in this whole experience. Mm. And the next day I woke up and I was like, what is happening? Wow. And it was just like, I went from being in this place where I'm like, it's over. It's done.
Wow.
Time to wrap it up.
Yeah.
And the next day I got an email and it was a complete game changer. It's quite an experience. It's quite an experience to go from like such a like a low to a wow.
Yeah.
I should keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. It's exhilarating. It's addicting is the problem.
I think so. I think my mom.
I think we're all a little bit insane, you know? There's that element of us that's a little bit crazy.
Yeah, yeah. The Delulu exists.
Yeah, yeah.
But we always find a solution.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of just like, I think as an entrepreneur, there's this gut instinct, and I don't know if it's just me, but I think I've always had like a good gut like my whole life. Like I've always just had good instincts. Mm-hmm. And I think as an entrepreneur, you sort of develop these really good instincts. Like you know when something feels good or it should be the direction you go in.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a bit of what you've been doing inadvertently and just not really, it's not like a cognitive thought that I should start looking into this, because you started your warehousing software before Amazon released their technology.
Right? Yeah, I started it before then, though I didn't have any intention of it being a big business.
Yeah. Yeah. So is that just some kind of foresight entrepreneurs have in some way, or it's just their curiosity that just, you know, guides them into all these different directions?
I think it's true. I think as an entrepreneur, you really feel the risk that you're taking sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I think everybody's aware that there's platform risk. I think everybody's aware that if you run an Amazon FBA business, you could get your account suspended and lose your entire business overnight. I think, and I think it's something that keeps people awake at night.
Let's define platform risk.
Yeah. So platform risk is like you are selling on top of somebody else's thing. So whether that's Amazon, where they let you sell on Amazon.com or .ca, or whether it's you've built an app that works on Shopify, but it has to run through official Shopify channels in order to work. Whatever it is, it's like your business can't exist unless this other platform exists. Google, Amazon, some other big company. And it's actually a great way of starting something because you don't, there's a lot of things you don't have to figure out, you know? So if you're starting your own e-commerce business, you know, you don't have to, if you ship to Amazon FBA, you don't have to figure out how to have efficient 2-day shipping to across the entire country, you know? You can just have them figure that out for you. So it's a quick way of getting started, but it means that you're under whatever policies that they have, and they may decide tomorrow to change their policies. And even if you were compliant before, now you're not. In my case, they were like, they saw the same problem that I saw where people wanted to use this particular format. And they don't care about a tiny little tool like mine. They're just like, well, this would help people. And it makes sense for them to develop it, honestly. Like, why shouldn't they put it on their platform? But it was a gap that they had that no longer exists that I was making money from. So that's platform risk.
And anyone on platforms like this, like what kind of suggestions would you give to them, like as a business owner? Would it always, you know, would it be take advantage of this opportunity as it exists today, you know, milk the cow, have it be the cash cow, but continue to look at other things you can build on your own that you have more control of, that is more sustainable for you long term? Because that's what it means to kind of be on a platform. You sort of, you give away a lot of the control for convenience, faster way to, you know, turn over and make money. But you also leave yourself at the risk of, you know, people like when YouTube decided to change their policy just a few weeks ago when, you know, creators who would have been making, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars on a monthly basis for never showing their face and all of this. And I used to see the ads for it all the time. And I'd be like, I can't believe this exists. But then imagine you took out a mortgage on that income.
Yeah, and that mortgage and doesn't care if
in 2 weeks changes your $50,000 goes away. You're no longer getting that from YouTube anymore.
Yeah.
Like your life is at complete risk.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough if you don't have any type of backup plan. But at the same time, I think your original thing of like, should you just milk the cow? I think that's probably more what I would lean towards these days. I think when I first started, I had this idea of like serial entrepreneurship being this kind of holy grail of of human existence. And these days, I think that if you find something that works, I think you should lean into it as much as possible. Because I think one of the mistakes that I made earlier, like I haven't told you about the 17 other businesses that I've tried that haven't worked, you know? And I started those doing, you know, throughout the entire timeline, I tried different things that totally failed. And I think that if I'd focused more of that energy into the things that were working, into, you know, getting more customers for the labeling product earlier, into organizing the operations of the e-commerce business so that I wasn't so cash dependent, I think that those things would have ultimately made those businesses more successful rather than, you know, my natural instinct is to kind of look for whatever next is on the horizon, whatever is most, you know, something new that's interesting, and that's what I'm attracted to. Mm-hmm. So I think that those businesses could have been a lot bigger than they were if my attention had been more focused on those things. And so I think that if you can, if you have the disposition for it, to try to just, if you find something that's working, make it as big as you can make it, you know, mm-hmm. get as much as you can out of it. But if you do have some kind of like platform risk or something along those lines, you need to be aware of that and like have a really nice cushion so that you can weather the storm if it does happen, which I wish somebody had told me so that I didn't have to be in such desperate straits at times.
But now you have great stories to tell us.
That's what it's all about. It's all about the stories.
It really is. I mean, it is all about the story, you know? It's funny because I used to love these reels on Instagram about dating and doing it for the plot. Doing it for the plot for your friends. And just like, you know, it sounds really interesting and really fun. And sometimes you just got to do things for the plot.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So, you know, as we talk about like your companies and all of that, you know, your company right now, which is in the warehousing business, logistics business, basically, what is truly the problem that, you know, you see growing over time with this kind of logistics? Because I don't think Amazon's going anywhere. Like, the convenience is too high.
Yeah.
You know? Why do you think no one else, like, saw this problem? Or maybe there are other people seeing this problem and not addressing it.
Well, it turns out it's a really tricky space to be in. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't realize it. Otherwise, I might have never have started doing it.
That's the naivety.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So it is a really tricky space to be in because the warehouse management system space is pretty packed. You've mm-hmm. got your big companies like Oracle, SAP, Microsoft. Yeah. They're taking big chunks of it, you know, and they're working with all the big guys.
Yeah.
But they also charge, you know, $1 million plus per year to use their software. So the warehouses that are just starting up, you know, maybe even operating out of their garage, mm-hmm. they're never going to use those big guys. Then you've got smaller WMS systems, maybe ones that are built for like just individual brands, you know, mm-hmm. and you could probably pay $50-$100 a month for a system like that. But the problem is it's not designed to work with a bunch of different clients. So these warehouses that I'm working with, they've got 30, 40, 100 different clients that they're working with. And they can't afford to pay these massive ticket prices for warehouse management systems that are built for 3PLs. So we found this really little kind of sweet spot where people running smaller warehouses that aren't for their own brands, but they're for other companies.
Yeah.
So it's a third-party logistics type of company.
Yeah.
They, you know, especially if they're kind of under the 20,000 square foot mark, there's no real great solution for them out there.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of filling that space, that little niche right there. And especially if they work with Amazon, then we're amazing for them because we have all this really deep integration with Amazon system. And I have a ton of personal experience working with Amazon. Mm-hmm.
And you've lived partially their experience as well, too.
I ran a warehouse, so I know what it takes to run a warehouse too, and I know the stress involved in how chaotic things get every day.
Yeah. So it's I think when people look back at their experiences, sometimes they might not feel like this one thing is valuable, but like the value just keeps adding up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, you ran your own warehouse and you were an Amazon seller. You've participated in every step of this chain.
Right.
To be at the right place where you can build something like this. Yeah. I mean, who else would have had an experience like yours to cater to cater to this niche group of warehouses.
Yeah, honestly, I hadn't thought about it in those terms before, but you're right. I guess the journey has been relatively kind of well-crafted for where I ended up here.
Yeah, yeah. And this is why I think no experience should be, like, underrated.
Yeah.
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 No experience should be underrated. Like, I was a camp counselor once.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, if I'd never had to deal with 10-year-olds never listening to me, I think by the time I entered the corporate world,
yeah,
I would have, like, wanted to, like, massacre people.
Yeah.
Don't put this on the podcast. I would have wanted to, you know, pull my hair out.
Exactly. Just put that tape in. Yeah, well, I agree. And, you know, one of the experiences that I've had that I think is being really valuable, though I never would have thought about it at the time, was in high school, I wanted to make a bit of side money. And so I ended up getting a job at a call center where we did debt collection. So I would literally call people all day and tell them to pay money, which is definitely not a glamorous job. And it burned me out real fast. You know, that's only there for 5 months. But it helped me. You know, before this podcast, we were talking about the German way. And, you know, I have clients that I work with were super popular in Germany for whatever reason. And one of the things I love about the German way, quote unquote, is that they're very direct. So that's sometimes nice because they're like, yes, I'd like to use your software. Let's start on Monday. And sometimes it's hard because they're like, this part of your software is not good enough for what we need. But in some ways, both of those things are actually good results.
Absolutely.
The worst result is when somebody says, I really like what you've put together here. Let me think about it and I'll get back to you.
And that is the Canadian way.
Yeah. You never hear back from them again. And it's like their politeness has robbed you of an opportunity to learn what you could have done better.
Yeah. I agree. I actually completely agree. And I'm so glad we're talking about this. And I love the German way, which we're defining the German way as just simply being direct and honest and transparent and not wasting anybody's time here. Like, their time is precious, your time is precious. We're both investing something here. Where I see in the Canadian landscape, I think we take being nice to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Where you're really just wasting people's time. You're actually helping hold back innovation in the country because we don't have an opportunity to iterate. And instead of just being a little bit more risky and saying, I'm willing to learn with you, I'm willing to help you learn, I'm willing to grow with you.
Yeah.
We're going to remain behind. And I think the reason overall we're feeling this whole, you know, there's a lot of stress around, you know, tariffs and everything earlier this year. We don't really talk about politics here, but with the tariffs and everything, like it, I think it became really scary because we lost a lot of our control as a country to other countries because they want other, we want other people to take the risk. And once it's de-risked, then we'll participate. Well, if we maintain that model, how on earth could we hold our own? How can we continue to grow? How can we innovate? And it's simply because we do things like being too nice, like not telling a startup, you know what? I don't think you're the right fit for me. Maybe somebody smaller, maybe somebody, or maybe your software just sucks. Like, tell me your software just sucks. Sam, I remember being on a call, like most of my clients are American companies because they kind of operate in the same way. Whereas like they are direct, they can be slightly rude sometimes. But that's okay. I much rather that than string you along for forever.
Yep.
And just because you don't have the guts to say no.
Yeah.
Or you just don't want to take the risk just yet.
Yeah.
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 I like the German way.
100%. And, you know, it doesn't have to mean not being kind. You know, there's no contradiction between kindness and directness.
Yes.
I think directness is actually a form of kindness.
Absolutely. It's a huge form of kindness.
Because criticism, if given in a good spirit, is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that people, at least in Canada,
are
very reluctant to give.
Yeah.
Maybe just because I don't know why. Culture, I don't know. But really good feedback has been the thing that has allowed me, even in my own personal life, to cut out, you know, behaviors that were not helping me in any way or like kind of offending people around me or whatever, whatever. You know, I can't know about those things unless people tell me about them.
Yeah.
So anytime somebody tells me something that they don't like about me, it's a gift, you know, even though it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing in our companies. I think if somebody looks at your software or looks at your product, looks at your service offering and says, look, this doesn't work for me because, you know, it's not a match with what we need to do as a company. You know, we're not going to make any money if we buy your service. You know, there's no ROI here, you know. That's a gift, and it doesn't feel like a gift.
No.
And I think that's why it's hard to give it, is because you know at the moment that person is not going to receive it as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only later in reflection that they're going to receive it as a gift.
Yeah.
So I think it takes some courage to be direct and see that as being kind to them. But you're being kind to them in the future, if that makes sense. Like, where they're not going to see it as kindness until later.
Yeah.
If they're mature.
I think that's okay, though, and I think that's necessary.
I think it is really necessary.
It's necessary because then, you know, like, how do you iterate and become better if everyone's going to be like, we love you. This is great. Everybody should do this.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. Not until somebody else does it.
Yeah.
It's literally the story of my entire life and company. but, you know, thankfully, you know, very similar to you, I had a client call me on Boxing Day a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My demos are usually about an hour long. Mm. In 30 minutes, he's like, okay, let's do it. I said, but I haven't shown you all of it. He's like, no, you've shown me enough that I know the rest of it is going to be above and beyond what I need.
Amazing.
So let's do it. When can we start? I need it by January 22nd. Can you do that? Well, of course I can.
Sure.
I'll make it happen. And like those kind, like that makes sense. And that customer has been like one of my best customers.
Mm.
They love the software. It's increased the volume in their business.
I love it.
And, you know, just their client experience overall. And it's just like, why do we have to go through years of conversation when this person, yes, the scale is different in terms of the size of the company is different. But that level of decision making and directness and real intention, is what's necessary, I think, in the Canadian space. Because I remember, I think there was a report that came out a few years ago that talked about commercialization in Canada. Like, we have so much innovation, we have so many like new things that we found and blah blah blah, but our ability to actually bring it to market is like so low.
Mm.
It's so low, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
I
mean, the entire government like support system is basically structured around research and development. So if you ever wanted to find a grant for, you know, building a piece of software or whatever, you can get a lot of support if you're doing kind of original research or you're building new technologies or whatever. But very little support for actual commercialization. Whereas in the States, it's very different. Like most of the support is around commercialization.
Correct.
Than like a go-to-market type of thing rather than the original research and technology. And, you know, I obviously you need the original research and technology part of things in order to have anything new to sell and bring to the market.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the commercialization aspect is not important. In fact, that's the thing that's eventually going to drive like employment and
that's the value maker.
Yeah, that's the that's the thing that, you know, you're integrating it into the world now, and that's what makes things valuable in the end.
Yeah,
it's the integration of it into actual problems.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just an academic exercise.
Yeah, which is fun. And I'm not anti-academic.
No, absolutely not.
It's just from if you want more jobs in the world, in your country, you know, academics isn't going to get you there.
Exactly. And that's the way we need to move. Anyhows, that's our little...
That's our dip in the toe into politics.
Non-political political comment, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's truthfully, I think somewhere deep inside of me, the reason I really needed this podcast to exist is to showcase that commercialization is possible.
Mm.
And there's real innovation that's here.
Yeah.
And people are solving real good problems. But the support our entrepreneurs get is actually minimal in the space that it actually needs to exist, which is the commercialization component of things. Because that's like you said, that's where the jobs are. That's where the economy is. That's where, you know, pride in the city and the country like exists. Like Hamilton is known for Steel City, you know, the hammer. Why? Because the factories take up how many hundreds of hectare acres?
Yeah, entire shoreline.
An entire shoreline feeding over 500,000 families on a daily basis. Like that is tangible.
It's amazing
value. And I think, you know, a city like Hamilton that has incredible entrepreneurs like yourself doing these great things should be spotlighted, because like we are the economic builders of our city and like of the country ultimately when you go beyond our borders.
Yeah. Yeah, I think obviously we can use all the help we can get. It's a tough job. It's a lonely job. And it's filled with failure. And
it is filled with
failure. It's like 9 out of 10 are going to not make it or at least have a very different path than they expected they were going to have.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, as entrepreneurs, like putting all that aside, it's like as much as we wish there was better support, there's nothing that can stop us from doing what we're going to do anyways.
Because you know? We love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like we're going to wait and be like, hey, government, what are you going to do? You know, it's like, well, you've made your choice. Now we're going to keep going.
Yeah.
Because that's what we were going to do anyways. We literally can't do anything else with our lives. You know what I mean?
I completely agree.
It's just like built into us.
Yeah, it is. It is built into us.
Yeah.
It totally is. And this has been such a good conversation. We've talked about everything.
So fun.
Like so much, like your journey of being a serial entrepreneur, you know, living on the edge and all of that. But as you reflect, because you have been doing this for a very long time now.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
So congrats to that.
Thank you.
What is one thing you're leaving behind in your entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah, so something I used to do that doesn't make sense anymore, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm leaving behind fear.
Mm.
I really just wanted an excuse to share this this thing that's really helped me in my life.
Okay.
And It's called The Artist's Dilemma. So I used to be really, you know,
original. You're a creative, yes.
Yeah, originally I was really into filmmaking. And one of the reasons I gave up on filmmaking because I made this thing that I thought was going to be really beautiful and good and ended up being really bad and I hated it. Mm-hmm. I burned every copy that I had of it, you know. It doesn't exist in the world anymore. I literally destroyed it.
You robbed us.
I didn't. and I didn't learn about this thing called The Artist's Dilemma until later in my life, mm-hmm. But it would have really helped me then, and it helps me now. And basically what it is when you're an artist or an entrepreneur, you have taste. So you see a problem and you know that it shouldn't be that way. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you see a painting or you see a film and you can tell the aspects of it that make it beautiful and good. Mm-hmm. And then you try to go and make it and you go to try to solve that problem and your capabilities aren't there yet. And you're not yet able to make something that lives up to the standard of taste that you have. Mm-hmm. And that gap is really hard to deal with because you're like, I know that the thing that I made isn't good enough. And the only way to close that gap is to over and over make things that aren't good enough.
Yeah.
And every time you'll get just a little bit better until you finally are able, I don't know, you may never even be satisfied with your own art, honestly.
I don't think you ever truly are.
Yeah. Yeah. But eventually, you know, you'll be making things that are good and beautiful, or you will be actually solving the problem that you set out to achieve. And so for me, I had a lot of fear of, what if the thing that I do isn't good enough? Mm. And I'm leaving that behind.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. That's a really big one to leave behind because fear is so paralyzing.
Yeah.
It's paralyzing to the point that you'll just stand in one place forever and the whole world will pass you by.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's so much scarier, at least to me, that's so much scarier than it is to just do something and let it not be that great.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever regretted doing something. I think mm-hmm. the things I regret are not doing things.
They actually, I think there is some real truth to that. Like they ask people like on their deathbeds, like what is something that you might regret, and it's always the not doing, and it's never the doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a really, really good one to leave behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the biggest thing that you've learned about yourself or about business or in general?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I've learned about myself, and it relates to the way that I do business, is that I really crave people around me, good people around me. And I can't operate in a healthy way without them.
Yeah.
So when you're running a software business, especially with everything being remote and all, and all that stuff, there aren't people, you don't have to have people around you. You know, you can just kind of punch away at the computer in your own time, in your own space, and you don't have to have people around you. And I've realized that even if I can do that for a year or 2 years, it just eats slowly away at me. And so I've learned that I need people, like I need an office with people in it where we're doing stuff together. And so that's a big learning for me, and it's a big priority now for me is making sure that I'm in a space where I have people that I work with.
I think that is important. I think it's important to have especially good people around you. And as an entrepreneur, you almost kind of get to choose.
Yeah.
Which is
great.
A great
But
gift.
Sometimes hard to choose.
Yes. It's hard to choose. You just choose really fast and you're just like, okay, next.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That's a really good learning. I learned that myself too, even though like I've learned to love solitude and being by myself. Having the right people around you is a game changer.
Yeah. And you can do it too, even if you don't have a big company. You can get a co-working space where you go to where you're, and even if, you know, even if you're a little bit more on the side where you prefer time by yourself, you know, even having an hour where you go to a cafe or an hour where you're going to some kind of networking thing or whatever, you know, whatever rhythm you need. But I do think, I can't speak for everybody, but for me, I need people around me.
Yeah. Agreed. And what is the one thing you're taking into the future with you?
Yeah. Taking into the future with me. I am taking into the future, actually, I think I'm going to take into the future one of the things that you said to me, which is that I didn't really connect all the dots of, like, there's no one else that has gone on a similar journey and has prepared you to, like, do the thing that you're doing now, making you kind of uniquely qualified to do this warehouse management system for Amazon third-party logistics companies.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to take that with me into the future. I'm going to remember that there is, like, a unique qualification because of the journey that I've been on that makes me capable of doing this particular business that I'm running now. So thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, that's so touching. I'm so glad that's what you're taking into the future. And it's hard to sometimes, you know, recognize the things that we have.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to have, like, help, you know, hold up the mirror to help you see your beautiful face.
Yeah.
And all the great things you've done. It's an inspiring journey, you know, and it takes me back to the moment, and I'm sure this moment is even more crystallized in your mind when you walked into that room and saw someone across the room and you're just like, those are my people. I think it seems like you do the same thing with business, and you take that risk to go talk to them, and you take that risk to go and start that new business, whether it's going somewhere or not, because we learn so much more from our failures than we do any of our successes. So yeah, I'm really happy for you. I'm really excited about what the future has for you, and maybe we'll have you back on our Buzzworthy podcast in the future.
I hope so. And what I'm excited about is when we get to hear your story. And when we hopefully one day we'll get to kind of
one day
the depths of what got you to where you are today. That's that's what I'm looking forward to. When that episode lands, I'll be there.
What did I say? Did I tell you it was going to be episode 300?
Yeah, I remembered that. I just didn't want to say it out loud. It was a secret.
It's, you know what? Look forward to it. Episode 300.
It's going to be a banger.
Someone is going to tell my story. Maybe I'll bring in some photos of baby me.
Ooh.
To show you some of the crazy things that I've done, some of the interesting journeys. Maybe I'll bring in some people that have been on that journey with me. Because it's funny, because somebody kind of reminded me the other day that my entrepreneurship journey actually kind of inadvertently started when I was about 8-9 years old.
Yeah.
And I never thought of it in that way. But that's a good story.
Wow.
We'll tell you later.
Deal with the weight. Can you just record the episode early and then send it to me at least so I can listen to it?
So you can hear it first. Maybe I'll tell you when the cameras are
coming. There we go.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Keith. It was an absolute pleasure. And 100%, the invite is out to you, Steve. So Steve is going to watch this.
There we go.
So we'll see you on another episode of Buzzworthy. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We're so glad to have you as part of our Buzzworthy community as we grow our network of Buzzworthy businesses. Continue to follow us on all the social media platforms at Buzzworthy_pod and follow us on whatever platform you're listening to so that you can get the new episodes as soon as they're out. This Buzzworthy podcast could not be done without our incredible team, starting with our music by Khaled Imam, our video and sound engineer, James Clark, Yvette Robichaud, our social media manager, Cesar Cardenia, our brand and creative lead, and finally, your host and executive producer, Shalacy Harris. We'll see you next week.